Welcome to the Bunker Hill Cheesecast, brought to you by Heine's Cheese Chalet, a little place with big taste. I'm Missy Horsfall, Director of Tourism Relations. Few cheese houses in our area of Holmes County, Ohio, use copper kettles to make cheese anymore. Most use large stainless steel vats. But Bunker Hill Cheese, as well as many other cheese houses and cheese manufacturers in the area, started out with copper kettles. It's how it was done in the old country, as cheesemakers from this area who emigrated from Switzerland were artisans who brought their craft with them. Copper kettles are still used in Europe for Gruyere, Emmentaler, Raclette, French Comté, and Parmigiano Reggiano cheeses, as well as many others. The reason goes beyond tradition, as a 2009 experiment proved. Italian scientists crafted 8 batches of Parmigiano Reggiano cheese using both stainless steel and copper vats. The results were inarguable. While outside the cheeses looked similar, the taste was very different. One reason for the difference is copper's thermal conductivity. It's 20 times more efficient than stainless steel. It heats more evenly. And so for those cheeses that heat at higher temperatures, like Gruyere, etc., they retain more of the minerals found in the milk. When cooked in a copper vat, they also gain microscopic levels of copper, which reacts to the fat content, creating a more pleasant flavor in the cheese. Cheesemakers in our area made the change to stainless steel vats due to the type of cheese they were producing. The types of cheese we make here, Swiss, Baby Swiss, Gouda, Cheddar, Colby, Yogurt, are called semi-soft and fall between a soft cheese like Brie and a hard cheese such as Parmesan or Asiago. Soft cheese is unripened cheese made by coagulating milk proteins with acid, and hard cheeses are ripened or aged by coagulating milk proteins with enzymes, a rennet, and culture acids. Aging cheese depletes cheese of moisture, making the cheese harder and drier than soft cheese. The differences between semi-soft and semi-hard cheeses may not be as clear, since some of the texture is made in the process of aging and pressure-packed molds. At Bunker Hill Cheese, we make artisanal cheese, which is defined by Culture Cheese magazine as cheese made with the make process being adjusted to the milk, rather than cheese made with milk that has been adjusted to a uniform standard. Oh, the world of cheese is a vast and glorious one, fit for every cheese lover's palate. And while cheese snobs might turn up their nose at the semi-soft cheeses made here in the heart of Ohio's Amish country, we believe that we've taken the best of the old and the new and come up with some awesome tasting cheese. Today, we'll talk with the granddaughter of the original owner of Bunker Hill Cheese and now co-owner with her sister, Leanne Heath. My guest today is Lisa Troyer. Welcome to the podcast, Lisa.
Hi, Missy. It's so nice to be with you this morning.
Well, I'm thrilled to have you on the podcast. I had your sister, Leanne, on, and we talked a little bit about family history and growing up at the cheese house and some fun little stories from her. But one of the things I wanted to talk to you about was how you got involved in the business itself. Of course, you grew up here in the business, but how did you get involved in working in the business?
Well, when I was in my early 20s, I worked in the music industry in Nashville, and I was a copyright administrator at a Christian record company, worked in music publishing, and I was actually approached by my supervisor about receiving a promotion. And, you know, I had missed being in Ohio, but I was very, very thankful, you know, to have a job in the music industry, which is, you know, has a really high unemployment rate. But when I was actually contemplating moving up in that environment, and, you know, the reason that I was offered the promotion was because I had business experience. And so many of the then young people that, you know, either went to Belmont or MTSU. I mean, they had the music industry degree, but they didn't have any practical application business experience. And so because of all of that background that I had, you know, it gave me an advantage over other folks. But, you know, as I was looking at the opportunity, it's like, well, okay. The pay wasn't great. I mean, have to say that. And, you know, because jobs in the music industry are very competitive, you know, because there's so few of them, it's kind of like, all right, is this really what I want to do? And Dad had always been like, well, you know, you can come back here and, you know, and you can work here, but you can also pursue, you know, those other interests that you have. And it was like, when I had the opportunity to decide, do I just want to work for somebody in a corporate setting, kind of being one of the lower rungs on a ladder, or do I want to embrace an opportunity where I can be involved in a business that, you know, I was raised in and I knew and I understood, but also the combining the things, because back in the 80s, you know, we were starting to do more videos, you know, like industrial videos to show the processes of things. And so because I had been trained in audio and video production when I was at the Art Institute in Atlanta studying music business stuff, there were a lot of applicable things, you know, from the marketing side of things. And so, yeah, it was just kind of like one of those moments where an opportunity to advance in one industry made me think, okay, is this really how I want to do this? So it was kind of around that time, too, that, you know, I had just kind of decided that I would like to be able to develop something more entrepreneurial. And of course, you know, anyone that knew my dad, he was very entrepreneurial. Yeah. And it's like, so, yeah, and he was willing to think outside the box. And so it was kind of at that time where I thought, well, if I can do what I know, but then also do something that I really love and enjoy and apply my education to, it just seemed like coming back into the family business was
a good
the
fit.
Optimal opportunity, yeah, to grow in several different directions. So, yeah. That's how that happened. So I turned down the promotion in Nashville and I moved back to Ohio.
Hey, well, you know, sometimes dreams do take a turn. You think you want one thing and then you realize, well, this may be something more fit to me and my personality and long-term as well. I'm curious, when you started here, I know one of the things that you really helped your dad develop was the wholesale side of the business.
Mm-hmm.
Our listeners know about Heine's Cheese Chalet. Our visitors come, they see that part. But we've always manufactured cheese. That's always been our main focus point. That's what we do, is we make cheese and we sell it. But selling it on a broader scale is something I believe that you helped your dad develop. Is that true?
Yeah. Well, the thing, you know, going back to those things that I learned about, you know, media and things that were applicable in marketing, advertising, and sales. When I came back, I think whenever a boss's kid comes back into the family business, you know, you have two options. You can take the attitude, well, I'm the boss's kid and, you know, don't you know who I am? Which I find to be an extremely unsavory way to approach life.
Yes.
Or understand that because you are the boss's kid, that, you know, you're under the microscope. And it's like, you know, legacy employees look at those situations where, okay, I've known you since the day they brought you home from the hospital. So what's this going to be like, you know? And for me, and I mean, and I will say too, I think being female, I mean, I felt that extra, I don't know if it's, well, yeah, pressure. I mean, we've done round tables, so we know pressure is not a bad thing because if there's no pressure in a tire, you don't go anywhere.
Correct.
So
yes.
I mean, but I felt that pressure to not take somebody else's existing job, but to create something new. And as I was just kind of getting back into the groove of being back in Ohio and stuff like that, my initial reentry is like, I ran the little lunch stand, you know, within the business, did the ordering, kept the inventory, managed the employees there, ordered immense amount of butter pecan ice cream because all the ladies on buses back then, it was like, I really do think that had I continued down that path, my right arm would be like really, really big and built because dipping ice cream on a busy, busy day in July. I mean, but it was good for me to do that because whenever you're in a successful retail environment, you get immediate positive feedback or negative, depending on who you're talking to. But it taught me a skill in management. In a little bit of HR, because, you know, you get to schedule, manage employees, and then, you know, and I digress. How did I get into the wholesale thing? No, I just saw that the retail business was just so incredibly huge at that time because, I mean, honestly, there was no competition.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, the tourism that was developing, you know, it was about 15 years into it, but it's like a lot of the infrastructure stuff had not been transitioned because, you know, Berlin still didn't have any traffic lights. The traffic pass through Berlin was difficult. So a lot of people would, you know, kind of go around the perimeter. And we had just, you know, tour buses. And it's like, and really the retail, when you have a team in there, it kind of runs like clockwork. So mm-hmm. It was like, that wasn't broken. So there was nothing to fix there. So it was like, okay, well, so what am I going to do? So I started to look at the things that we did that were unique. And then, of course, you know, the yogurt cultured cheese came to the top of the list, that variety that Dad created, you know, back like 1970. And we had been selling, you know, to mom and pop health food stores and stuff like that. But as somebody who had lived in an urban area, I mean, I kept seeing more people were eating yogurt, kind of just that gathering knowledge from kind of a different demographic area that made me think there's something more to this product that's being underutilized. So as the progression, you know, went and I started attempting to create a bigger market for yogurt cheese, that was just one of the things I kind of just took upon myself, and I liked the creative aspect of it. And then it came to, you know, a couple of years into that process, you know, we're growing that business, but my sister Leanne, you know, at that point in time, her son Quint was just this little guy, and a friend of ours who was a video producer, we actually said, let's do some focused yogurt cheese kind of advertising. And then there was this opportunity. We just did a very basic photo shoot with Leanne and Quentin. It was just a mom and literally a mom and her little boy sitting at the kitchen table enjoying a snack, and the snack was yogurt cheese. And on that print ad, it was termed the ultimate family snack. And the thing that was so strange is that we ran this ad in Food Distribution Magazine, because everything was, you know, print, you know, back then, you know, there was no, you know, Al Gore hadn't invented the internet yet. Sorry, I'm being facetious. But the ad was seen by a small specialty ethnic food distributor on the East Coast in New Jersey. And because Eastern Europeans and Ukrainians and immigrants from the then Soviet Union, I mean, yogurt was always a big part of their diet. And this guy, he found it to be intriguing. So that one ad and that one customer started this perpetuation of the growth of yogurt cultured cheese to now doing national, both branded and private label programs and stuff like that. So it's kind of like it was the right time, it was the right product, and a whole lot of favor from God. Yeah, and the wholesale business went from under $1 million and over the time period of that yogurt cheese just kind of what I would call spreading across the country. It flipped the business from being a retail focused business to growing the wholesale business, and then also expanding that into the development of raw milk cheeses, A2 milk cheese, non-GMO cheese, and crunchy cheese crisps. So it feels like a lot of different things, but you know, it's like building blocks. And we've always tried to find that specialty niche in the market, because Dad was like one of the first people to put inclusions in cheese back when people thought it was nuts. But I'm glad he did, and no, he wasn't nuts. So.
Yeah, he was cutting edge in a lot of ways, and a lot of his ideas, as I talked with Lee, and we talked about his really creativeness in making cheese, the things that he thought of, and what he, you know, he liked developing the new cheese and the new flavors. And so that's part of the history and part of the story here. I'm curious about the retail end of things, because I've been here about 12 years, and you mentioned a lunch counter. I don't think I ever knew you had a lunch counter here at Hines.
Yeah, we actually called it Papa Hans Cafe, yeah, because Grandpa John, his real name was Hans. And so, yeah, I mean, and it was during that time where, you know, when Dad had remodeled the retail to that horseshoe, you know, go around and buy the cheese thing, I mean, we started to use the rest of the building to kind of build back and add things. And when you have 5, 10 tour buses at the location at a time, you had to develop, you know, places for people to migrate to while they were waiting to go through the cheese line. And so that was when the development of, you know, the expanded bulk food offerings, and people are content when they can spend a buck on an ice cream cone. Mm-hmm. And so we ran through a lot of those keep people happy kind of things while they were waiting to buy cheese.
And of course, with your mom developing the gift shop that was here and all of those
absolutely.
Things.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it was crazy back in the Beanie Baby days. I mean, we would have just a plethora of collectors. They knew the day that mom got the shipment. And it was like, I mean, there was a lot of Beanie Babies that were sold that purchased equipment for the factory for the upgrades. Everything works together.
Those fads come and go, but I do remember the Beanie Baby phase for sure. So tell me, Lisa, you've been in the business a long time, as mm-hmm. Leanne said, she was brought home from the hospital to the cheese house. But in the area and thinking of tourism and even Hines itself, what's the biggest change you've seen, or what are some of the changes that you've seen?
Well, I think with the advent of club stores like Sam's Club and Costco and things like that, the large quantity, you know, come to Amish country and buy, you know, 10 wheels of cheese at retail and stuff like that. Those kinds of things have kind of transitioned to smaller pieces, but broader varieties. And a lot of it, I think, is because Amish country is experiential. And as the, I just want to say, you know, the folks around here that developed, you know, kind of that bulk food. And I mean, a lot of that club buying mentality, you know, the Amish community has been doing that forever. I mean, really, truly. I mean, it's like, you know, the Mennonite Charity Meat Cannery place, you know, it's just like buying bulk for large family or for, you know, because, I mean, they're hosting church and stuff like that. So they'd always want to buy in bulk. They'd want to buy wholesale because they were facilitating large groups. So that was not something new to our community, but people coming in, I have to wonder how many grocery executives have come through our business as a tourist, because then I see these ideas popping up in the mainstream. And so, you know, for us, you have to transition with the times. And I remember, like, back in 2008 when, you know, there was, you know, stock market went way down and the recession was very, very heavy. What we noticed is that, and even during the pandemic too, you know, even with the social distancing and stuff like that, you know, the visitors, you know, there's not as many, but they still like to have experiences and get out of the house and stuff like that. So during that time when the recession was kind of kicking in 2008, I don't think that our area felt it as deeply, because when you manufacture food, people feel like they're investing their dollar wisely because it's something that they can experience and enjoy that has you know, a nutritional value to it as well. And it's a low ticket purchase. I mean, it's like when car sales are down and big ticket purchases are impacted, there's actually, you see some elevation in food purchasing that are small quantity items. And that's when we really transitioned into focusing a lot more on the prepackaged cheese. And I mean, we had always done that, but we started availing even more and more varieties in that way. So people would, you know, and we see it now, it's like people come in and they'll buy, you know, a dozen cracker cuts because they get a variety of things. They're in singular package, vacuum sealed, so they maintain their shelf life, and they can just kind of, you know, have their own cheese of the day or cheese of the week club at home. So just being able to give the consumer an opportunity to experience things in a low investment upfront way, it's shown us that, you know, like with unique items like raw milk cheddar. I mean, back when I told my dad and my husband and the plant guys, it's like, we need to do this. And they were like, oh, are you kidding me? No, let's not do that. But I said, but I'm seeing these trends. And it's like, if we can perfect it on the front end, it'll give us opportunity to grow it in market. Now it's like, of course, you know, I'm not very patient and I'm just like, why isn't this growing faster? I think this is a great idea and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, and of course my, oh, how should I say, unbridled creativity needs to be, you know, kind of, you know, quelled a little bit so it can be implemented in an efficient way. But in 2020, that raw milk cheddar cracker cut was our number one prepackaged wholesale item. So, yeah, I mean, it's like, those are the things that are satisfying to me. I wish things would happen faster, but, you know, it's just about when you see you have a product that people value, you have to think there's more people that will value it if they get the opportunity to experience that. And that's what our retail has really been. You know, there have been a lot of corporate, you know, buyers and brokers and stuff that they have come here on vacation and then they reach out later and it's like, you know, it's a perfect story, like our growth in several, you know, regions of Kroger. Vince Front, the national dairy buyer, I mean, he's originally from Johnstown, Ohio, and he works at headquarters in Cincinnati. And he reached out and he said, you know, my wife and I, we love the place. We've come as tourist guests several times over the years, and we would like to bring some of these items to the forefront at Kroger. And the fact that, you know, the company, Leanne and I, you know, were the owners. So we are now a certified women-owned business. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's just this opportunity with Kroger came because that national buyer had visited the retail and saw what we were able to do in variety and packaging and stuff like that. And now we're seeing that being placed on the shelves in the divisions of Columbus, Cincinnati, Detroit, and I think Atlanta. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
The lesson is to stick with it, hard work, and, you know, just hanging in there. And
yeah.
You've seen a lot come to fruition, even as though you said you were impatient. You've hung with it long enough and stuck with it long enough and been faithful to the business long enough that now you're seeing some of that effort come back in some ways that are, I'm sure, very fulfilling and satisfying to you as not just the business owner, but in terms of the family business prospering.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, I was born in 1964. So, I mean, I was around in my formative years, 5 years old, before the remodeling and before the tourism hit and stuff like that. And to see what dad's ideas and tenacity and mom's support and also her ingenuity too on the gift side of things. She pretty much kept all the books. I mean, I remember sitting at our kitchen table with, you know, there were five Amish guys that were on the milk producer committee and they would review the, you know, milk weights and stuff like that with my mom and they'd write the producer checks together.
Oh,
yeah, and I sat there and ate bowls of ice cream during those milk producer meetings. So it's like, I followed dad around the plant, but I got to see the way my mom interacted with these Amish gentlemen. And it's like, that's something too that, you know, these men really respected mom. And I remember too that it's like, you know, if there was a medical problem or something like that, sometimes these Amish men and their wives, I mean, they would reach out to mom and ask what she thought. So, yeah, I mean, it was just the training ground, you know, what is it, you know, more is caught than taught. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I caught a lot from my parents. Yeah. I really, really have.
Yeah. Well, I so appreciate you being on the podcast today and getting a little glimpse into some of these backstories and the stories of your parents who I've appreciated so much through the years and the family-owned business here and the partnership with the employees and the community. It's pretty unique and a really wonderful place to be. So thanks for coming on and sharing with us.
Hey, thanks, Missy. And I really appreciate the way you represent us out in the world of tourism. And congratulations to you for being named to the tourism board. So that's great.
Well, this is an awesome place and I love promoting it. Not just Heine's Cheese, which is wonderful, but Ohio's Amish country in general is a wonderful place to visit. So thanks again.
Indeed. Thanks, Missy.
And now it's time for Did You Know? Did you know that cheese has bacteria in it? In fact, for cheese, it's all about the bacteria. Microbes, or microorganisms, which is any microscopic living organism, is not only found in cheese, it's added to the cheese as it's being made. There are thousands upon thousands of possible microbes found in bacteria, molds, and yeast that may make their way into a batch of cheese. The skill is in making sure they're the ones you want found there. Microbes make their way into the cheese at every step of the process, through the raw milk itself, starter cultures and deliberate additions, ambient microbes found in the environment, salt-tolerant microbes, and microbes found in the aging process. The good bacteria added to the cheese-making process helps with fermentation, flavor, and textures such as holes in the Swiss cheese, and molds to aid in the aging process. There are, of course, bacteria or microbes we certainly don't want in cheese. So it's in with the good germs and out with the bad. And now you know.